Hello, guys. Welcome to the Blackspin Global Podcast. I am Lucy.
And I'm Eugene.
And welcome to a brand new episode. Happy Black History Month.
Happy Black History Month, Lucy.
In the UK.
In the
just
UK,
just before
exactly.
You guys are too quick, you know.
In the comments.
You know, Black History Month is not only celebrated in the US, guys. It's also celebrated in the UK. Mm-hmm. We have a very rich and popular Black community from the African and Caribbean people. Happy Black History Month to us. And speaking of that, I mean, if you were living under a rock, if you were not being keeping up, your favorite podcast did a special Black History Month podcast with Wimbledon. Let me repeat that again. Blackspin Global podcast did a special Black History Month podcast with Wimbledon.
It's crazy, yeah.
In
the ground. Well,
when you really sit down and think about it, in the Wimbledon Library, where we had the backdrops of Coco and Venus and Serena's outfits and fits. And yeah, so if you haven't checked that out, guys, please go to our YouTube page and check that out. It is available on audio, but I will recommend to watch it
because
you know, it was a nice setting and they put a lot of effort into that. So a massive thank you to Wimbledon, especially that not a lot of UK, I feel like UK platforms, organizations can do a lot better at celebrating Black History Month. But even in tennis itself, I remember in February this year, I was so disappointed. There was nothing. They posted stuff 1st of October and I was like, yep, that's it, done. And even the things that they were posting was very small and basic. And what I found so interesting is majority of the Black players, or at least the most popular ones, are from the US. I'm hoping that Wimbledon's actually led the way for the rest of the platforms to do better at celebrating the players. But either way, if they don't do it, it's fine. Blacksman Global celebrate Black History Month every single day, every week, every month, every year.
Facts.
And that's on our Thea Gibson. How are you, Eugene?
Well said. I'm good, Lucy, man.
This is our first proper
pod. It's a great introduction.
No, it's the US Open.
Exactly. So we're back here.
We're back.
In our usual setting.
Usual setting.
The backdrop may look different.
Yeah, it looks different, guys.
We're in the same spot.
It doesn't matter, but we're still here. We're home. How you been feeling?
But yeah, like you said, everything you said, Lucy, that's it. The whole Wimbledon thing was crazy. Kind of, we're still living off the back of that, really.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just proud, man. Kind of to see how far we've come. It's been 4 years since we 2020 we started podding.
Yeah.
Obviously the platform started in 2019.
Yeah, but the pod started.
But yeah, we've been going 4 years and it's just been steady kind of evolution.
Sure.
Year after year. So just excited.
This is just the
man.
Beginning, guys. We just started.
It's very, very exciting.
2025, we everywhere.
But how are you? I know your phone's blowing up. It's been blowing up nonstop.
Listen, I'm good. I'm happy. US Open gave me a different type of drive. So there'll be a lot of exciting things coming. I'm no longer jobless.
Congratulations, new job.
I didn't say this, but I lost my job doing Wimbledon, but we're back up, guys.
Crazy time.
Crazy time. So while I was at US Open, I was podding and looking for a job.
Wow, it was literally, guys, in New York, Lucy was literally taking interviews, over Zoom. Which is wild.
There was time, but there was, 2 days where I had to come to the grounds
a
late
bit later.
Because, I was doing interviews in the morning because of the time difference
exactly.
as well. That was a thing.
But I'm going to take some credit because what did I say to you? I said, listen, by end of September.
You know what? Big up you. You really believe myself. You actually said, Lucy, by the end of September, you'll find a job. And I was like, nah. And you were like, nah, I think it's so. Thank you. Thank you for your support.
I'm taking it.
The times I was even crying and Eugene was like, nah, you got this. So thank you, man. I really appreciate it. But I'm happy to be back talking about, I wanted to pod so bad. I was like, damn, I miss. There's still, some things are happening.
We're here. So let's get into it, man.
So first of all, the one big thing that did happen was Laver Cup.
Okay.
So a little big congrats to that. Shout out to Team Europe. Although there wasn't any Black players in the Team Europe.
No Arthur Fils, or it was Gael Monfils and Arthur Fils last year.
Yes.
This year, there weren't any.
There were not. Afterfeast was in a whole other mindset, which we'll talk about later. But yeah, but there was the one highlight, big highlight in terms of BSG-wise was Francis finally beating Daniil Medvedev.
Shelton also got a single win over Medvedev.
I'm a massive Daniil Medvedev fan. Regular listeners, you guys know, but I did feel some type of way with the way that he was not letting the black players beat him. I was like, you know what? And it's not as the black players beat. Like, for example, there will be a tournament, right? Daniil Medvedev will play like a three set, a five set, like let's say it's like a Grand Slam. Mm. All of his matches would be five set against the black players, three. And I'm like, you're taking it too seriously. So I was very happy about that. And I know Francis was very happy about that. The whole tennis Twitter were like, oh my gosh, finally, this day has come. So I hope this will, you know, motivate him and push him to keep on like, you know, being able to beat this guy, because he can't keep on doing this, Daniel. You know, although he has not had a great season this season compared to his other ones. It's been a bit tricky, but I think it's mainly because the guys are levering up now.
100%.
Do you get what I mean?
You say that. I think he's dropped outside the top five.
He's reached the finals twice this year at two different tournaments. I can't remember back of my head, but yeah, he's mainly been beaten by guys who are on form,
yeah,
or guys
the
who
top
are
guys,
like, yeah, leveling
yeah.
up. Yeah, so I started to give him credit, but that's what I said compared to his previous years. I'm not saying like, oh, this is worse.
Yeah, like
year
he hasn't
ever.
Won any Grand Slams.
Exactly,
yeah.
He won Grand Slams or even titles. Like last year, he won like four hard court titles, three hard court titles. Like he was winning titles, whereas this year he's just reached like two or three finals.
Did you watch much of the Laver Cup in general?
I'm going to be so real. I didn't watch any of it.
Because I did. I really got into it. To be fair, it was only because I was off that weekend. So I was able to kind of like pay attention to it.
I'm going
to
be so real. When I came back from US Open, I was just in bed catching up on all of my shows and sleeping and napping. Especially that I knew that was the... Although I was off work for so long, BSG kept me so busy. Yeah, so I actually, yeah. Like, people were like, oh yeah, holiday over. I was like, guys, I was working. Mm. I was not actually on holiday. We were out here making this thing work. But no, I didn't actually.
Because what are your thoughts on, we've spoken about Laver Cup before, like on previous episodes.
Yeah.
But in general, what have your thoughts changed or...
Do you know what?
Or feelings towards the tournament?
It's weird because I saw a lot of people against it this year. Like, well, on Twitter anyways, like a lot of people saying, oh yeah, like, do we need a Laver Cup? Why do we have a Laver Cup? And this is, I feel like sometimes as us hardcore tennis fans or tennis people, we tend to forget that there is a bunch of people who are not like us. So this is an opportunity for those who are like not proper tennis hardcore fans to come and actually enjoy the sport. Yeah. So I'm not against it personally. I think some people were against it mainly because of the calendar and stuff. Okay. But I'm like, yeah, but that's the players. If they decide to go and play, they play. Like, it's not like it's a tournament where it's mandatory or like it's the end of the world. It's like, it's literally an exhibition. And it's a win-win. The players get their money. When guys, the economy is messed up. Like, of course, players are going to be playing a lot more than before. Like, a lot of people are not putting that into consideration. Like, the economy is beating everybody's ass right now. Like, even the richest of the richest. That's why all these artists are giving us products and not music or movies. They're telling us, hey, here's my makeup brand. Here's
my alcohol.
Let's
stick to the tennis, man.
I'm just using that as an example just to show, like, these... Because that was another reason
it's
why people are saying, like, oh... The Laver Cup's not needed. Like, the calendar's already too long. I get it, but one is that. But also, it allows us to, when I say us, I mean the sport, to be, like, exposed and, like, get people more in. Because if they're watching it and they're enjoying it, it's calm. Although, I wonder if the Laver Cup is more, like, for the rich people.
I don't know, Lucy. You know, I feel like the players, they kind of take to or have taken to it more and more as the years have gone by.
That's true.
Obviously, there's no ranking points.
That's true, you're
but
right.
It does affect the head-to-head. So now, yeah, like we've said, TFO now has a win over Medvedev.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
on the
yeah.
ACP's
yeah.
official
yeah.
head-to-head kind of standing or record. And I feel like, yeah, as the years have gone by, like the player, you can kind of see the players are taking it more seriously.
You're
and I feel
actually
like that,
right. You're right, yeah.
That
yeah.
for me makes, that enhances the competition.
Yeah.
Because if you can see the players are like trying and like putting in effort,
mm-hmm.
you're going to feel more invested, like when you're watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like also too, like you don't really get many tour, you don't get any tournaments on the tour that give you that opportunity to kind of have a look at players kind of interacting with each other, like at that, on that level.
Mm-hmm.
So like obviously doing changeovers and like, yeah, you know, they're giving right. each other tactical advice. And
yeah.
for me, I love that. And obviously I'm a tennis fan, mm-hmm. I'm a tennis head, and mm-hmm. I feel like most tennis fans mm-hmm. appreciate that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But my only thing with the tournament is that, yeah, like where's the women's equivalent? Like there should be a women's Laver Cup.
I think some people were saying that too.
That's my only thing. Or maybe like they can maybe have a combined thing. But then you're kind of tapping into like United Cup, which is like at the start of the year.
Yeah. But even that United Cup is mixed.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Hey, exactly.
Remember what Jimmy Jenkins said?
Stop it.
The girls don't like each other. It. They're not that buddy buddy though. Look, but it's, even if we don't know the stories, you can actually see. Look at the guys before they go in; they're spotting each other.
Which I love.
Blah blah blah.
Listen, man,
I'm the complete opposite.
We love.
I like the way they
don't. Can't we all just get along?
We're not getting along. I'm here to play and go home.
Listen, man, there's too much war and strife in this world. Like,
either way, shout out to the Laver Cup people. I think next year is going to be in San Francisco, so it might even be even busier and bigger since it's in the US.
And new captains as well. So Andre Agassi will be Team World and Yannick Noah, Team Europe captain, which would be pretty cool.
I'm really happy about that. Yeah. So, that means I definitely have to follow it next year.
Tap in.
Have to tap in. So, yeah, shout out to Laver Cup and them, man. Should we talk about... So, I messed up. I didn't realise we're not supposed to talk about the Laver Cup cool, first. Cool. My bad, guys. But, obviously, big news. Coaching changes.
Big news. And not just one or two, like three.
Three.
Like,
three. And not even just three. It's three from like big players. Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. I think that's what's actually like.
All in the women's game as well.
All in the women's. The women's are not playing anymore. They're like, okay, you got to go. You got to go. You got to go. So should we start off with the one that probably shook the table the most? Naomi Osaka.
Do you think so?
Oh, yeah.
More so than... Like, yeah.
100%.
Okay.
Specifically because of who the coach is. And who's her coach?
Patrick Mouratoglou. So yeah, Wim Fossett, how long was she working with Wim for? Was it
three or four years? I think he put on the caption 3 or 4 years.
And a pretty successful like partnership. Yeah, two grand slams. I mean, yeah. And obviously during that time too, that's when she had her child.
Yeah.
So like you can call it a transitional period as well mm-hmm. for her.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, why did it take you by surprise? Like,
it didn't take me by surprise.
No, it didn't. Okay, I thought you said it did.
It didn't. No, it didn't. It didn't.
Or you said it shook the table. Sorry.
It shook the table, yeah. It shook the table,
so why,
yeah.
So why'd you say that?
Not because it was... I don't think necessarily the fact that she got rid of Wim. Mm-hmm. It was specifically because she hired Patrick.
Okay.
And when I said shook the table, it was more like, oh my gosh. Yeah, like, you know. Yeah. And do you know what? This is going to be very surprising for a lot of people, for some people. For me, I was actually... do you know what's so, it's funny because the rumors were there for like a little while because they came at the airport together. And I think actually, no, when she announced it, immediately there was an article that came out that said that she's working with Patrick. Like they've been around Patrick, but I was like, nah, this source does not look.
There were pictures of them practicing, I think, at UCLA.
And then there was that, but that article came out literally the day she announced, hey, me and Wim are no longer working together.
Okay.
So that's why I wasn't too like... thing on it, like I was like, okay, I wasn't too sure, but either way, when it was then like confirmed, I looked at it and I was thinking to myself, I am actually more excited for Patrick about this than Naomi, because I feel like this is literally going to be this partnership is the best for him to prove to himself and to prove to the tennis world and us that have been not doubting him, but wondering, are you really on job to be like, I can actually do this? I feel like the partnerships that he had with, for example, with Halep, I feel like she wasn't really the right person because Halep is like up and down and she was already kind of like established.
Yeah.
She already had 2 Grand Slams. She already won a couple of titles. She was, you know, she ranked well and whatnot. Holger Rune, I feel like Holger Rune is someone where there's too many people in his ears.
Mm.
Have you seen his camp? There's 50 people. and to me, I feel like if you are someone like him who's not reached like Grand Slam levels yet, you don't need 50 people in your camp. Now, if you're Sabalenka, if you're Osaka, if you're Coco, if you're Serena.
No, listen, I like Holger.
No disrespect to Holger, I think
with when Patrick was on the team, he did win. He won Paris, which was his biggest.
Hold on, hear me out. What I'm trying to say is, because there's so many people in his team, so many people talking, including, like, even his mum, she's very heavily invested.
Yeah, very vocal.
Very vocal. I feel like it's harder for Patrick to do his job. And think about it, they were on and off as well.
Yeah.
They were on and off. One moment together, and one moment they're not. And Holger Rune is someone where I feel like, obviously we don't know him personally, but based on the things that I saw on the Netflix and his tweets where he's being cheeky and stuff, I feel like he's the type of person where, you know what, yeah, you can tell me what to do, but not too much.
Yeah.
But that's probably the reason why he has so many people. So I feel like Patrick couldn't really do his job. Osaka is someone who just came back from maternity. She's got her slams. She's still young. She still has like a lot of many years coming to her. Like, she's just the perfect player for him to be like, all right, you guys have been wondering if I can really do this. I can do this right now.
Mm.
To a point where I loved Naomi Osaka's comment about like Patrick and stuff.
About appointing
him, yeah. She spoke to the WTA and this is what she said. And the reason why I love it is because literally everyone feels the same. I think the fact that he was Serena's coach for me made me want to avoid him just because his persona is so big. Like, this isn't rude because I found out it's not true, but I didn't know if he was a good coach or he coached Serena. Then I met him, talked to him, worked with him on the court. He absolutely is a really good coach. I'm really glad that he's taking this project on as well. When I read that, I was relaxed. Mm. I was like, this is perfect. We're all on the same page here. And when we'll talk more about their matches, I will talk about the things that I've already seen that, you know, she's worked on in the Asian swing so far. So, yeah, I'm excited for Osaka, but I'm actually more excited for Patrick because personally, I like the guy. Mm. Like, I know we talk, and she even said it, yeah, he's so big as a big persona, but bro, number one, he's a business. Number two, he's a popular coach. Number three, the guy loves, breathes tennis. Like, how many people have we had on this podcast that are talking so highly about Patrick, he's knowledgeable about
he's a tennis guy, definitely.
The Jenkin Bros told us, Eubanks told us, like, so many people literally told us on here. John Williams, he told us, like, he really is a tennis guy. So, yeah, it's exciting in terms of the tennis world.
Mm.
And I'm excited, obviously, for Osaka to get, like, another perspective and to help her push, you know, to a game because she has it. She just needs to, you know, get to it, and Patrick can help her with that.
No, definitely.
How did you feel about it?
No, again, everything you said, I mean, like, I completely agree with. So there's not really much for me to add. Like, I think the only thing I'll say, like you said, Patrick is kind of, he's a brand. Like, even players that aren't associated with him, say, for instance, Arthur Fils, who we'll talk about later on, his coach or someone, there was someone in his camp who was wearing, like,
the M.
I think it was a t-shirt or something.
What, Arthur Fils, you said?
Yeah, his coach.
His coach, yeah, he's wearing, the Maratoglu thingy.
So it's like so many coaches come through that academy.
Yeah,
or like
yeah.
have some kind of link to Maratoglu.
100%.
Like, and I think that speaks to kind of who he is as well. And to bring it back to Osaka, I think you're right in terms of her kind of looking for something different now in terms of, because she's still trying to find, you know, new ways to kind of advance her game.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously he has a track record. Obviously Serena, Halep, like you mentioned, Holger Rune too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's worked with top players.
Yeah.
Obviously Serena's the best out of them all.
Mm-hmm. They still won slams anyways.
And this is what I'm saying. Everybody he's worked with has pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
And there's obviously potential now for Osaka to go and do more.
Yeah.
And I feel like, yeah, now, and that's no disrespect to Winfrey, because they had a successful time together, but
for sure,
there's nothing wrong with kind of change or freshening things up.
Yeah.
And I think more players should get credit for doing that, because it couldn't have been an easy decision for Osaka to make, to say, we're going to call it.
Yeah.
And like, I'm basically looking to go in a different direction.
Yeah.
And that's what she's done. So I can't really see it not being a success. Like, I'm going to say it's going to bring a lot of success for her.
For sure.
Because she's already shown signs as well, which we'll talk about later on. But yeah, I feel like it's an exciting time.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's exciting, yeah.
Not just for Osaka, but also for Patrick, like you said.
Yeah.
So,
We're looking forward to it.
Coco Gauff. Ending things with Brad Gilbert.
I ain't going to lie, bruh. I did a little two-step dance.
Stop it.
Respectfully. I mean, to be honest, that wasn't shocking because her last question at the US Open someone from the Washington Post did ask her, like, hey, like, are you thinking of getting a second opinion or whatnot? And the way she answered it was like, yeah, I'm looking to see like if I can get,
specifically on the serve.
On the serves and stuff, yeah. I took it in as like, yeah, some things are about to change in this place, okay? And I was hoping it was Mr. Brad Gilbert. Thank you for your services.
And again, let's not take away, obviously, he did.
He did, that's what I'm
saying. During her time, she won the US Open.
That's what I'm saying, is that, yeah, we can be happy.
I need to say this as well, because at the time, I was like, yeah, he's getting too much credit. Like, Coco Gauff was the player on the court, you know, hitting the balls, winning the points.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I did feel like at the time, it was like, wow, like, why is all the attention on Brad Gilbert?
On Brad,
like,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
He's coming in, like, basically, he's turned her into, like, a Grand Slam champ. Like, bro. She had all of the ingredients already. Like,
yeah.
And she's going to win more with or without him. She's going to show now without him.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of time, in my opinion. But again, that couldn't have been, I don't know how easy a decision that would have been for Coco to make. But I think, like you said, there were kind of murmurings during the US Open.
There was.
This is probably going to end soon.
I feel like it was the... For example, you know how we said that Patrick is a brand?
Yeah.
Patrick's a brand, but he was, I don't know, it's weird. He's probably the most popular tennis coach. Like, if we're keeping it real. Like, I remember when I talk about popularity, I'm always thinking outside of us tennis fans. I feel like out all the coaches that are out there, there's more people that would definitely know Patrick than anyone else.
No, that's a fact.
And that's what I'm saying, but it's weird. I've never felt like Patrick is putting too much effort into everything else and not focusing on his player. Brad Gilbert was getting that a lot. Patrick was getting that more towards the end of Serena's career, which makes sense. I'm about to lose a big fat check because she's about to go and not longer play. I need to go make sure that I'm good. Do you get what I mean? Like, I feel like he did it correctly. And I think that's why with Brad, I don't think he knew, from the outside anyways, it didn't look like it was working out well with him doing what he was doing. Like, I don't know.
ESPN stuff.
We spoke about it. Like, I didn't like the whole ESPN right after a match, especially after Coco losing.
Kind of crazy, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not too surprised. But either way, she's got a new coach now.
Matt Daly. I think this is the first WTA player he's worked with.
He's worked with, yeah, for sure. This actually is. He's worked with Denis Shapovalov. They started working together in May 2023 and then they worked together like that, the remainder of that season. But he mainly worked with like top 100 players before and stuff. So this is like the biggest player that he's working with. So we'll see how it goes.
And he's more of like a technical kind of coach. Like he's big on like technique and stuff, which I think she's trying to get, advice on. Obviously the forehand, the serve.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. He's much more into like the technique.
But I feel like Coco has a technique.
Of course she does. Like she's a pro tennis player, bro. Like
I feel like, no, what I mean is that I would think she would want a coach that works, that will help her more. Actually, no, let me take that back. Let's see how it goes. Let's see how it goes. Actually, yeah, you never know.
The other change, or the other major kind of coaching change, which broke, most recently now.
Mm-hmm.
Iga Swiatek,
yes sir,
also announcing that she parted ways with her coach, Thomas Wotarowski.
Yeah, and she also pulled out of Wuhan after that as well.
Yeah, so she hasn't played since the US.
Yeah. She didn't play the Asia swing or anything.
I wonder what her schedule's going to look like now, because obviously she's got, the WTA finals.
WTA finals, yeah.
I'm not sure, because is she injured? I'm not sure, is she injured?
She just said personal reasons.
Okay, so it must be because of all the kind of stuff happening.
I think all the stuff happening, yeah. So we'll see how it goes. But it was just interesting how back-to-back.
I know.
Osaka, Coco, and Iga, so...
Because Coco's was like the shortest term, as in Brad Gilbert. She was working with Brad for what, 2 years, if that?
No.
A year and a bit?
A year and
let's call it a year and a bit. It's been over a year.
Yeah. It's after Wimbledon they started working together.
Okay, so a year and a half, about?
Like a year, 3-4 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then obviously Osaka for set three, we said 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And then Swiatek and Wotarowski, 3 years.
Yeah.
So I don't know, like that for me, that kind of
good timing.
Yeah, and
that, especially that these are young players. They're not like 30. Mm. These are young players. They've done, like, you're evolving, you're changing. So to me, I don't feel like it's anything bad. Like, yeah, it's great. Like, it's opportunities. And these coaches can work with these other players as well. So
no, exactly.
Let's see how it goes.
We'll see how this all kind of plays out. Mm-hmm. Should we get into the Asia swing? So we had a champion. We've kind of spoken about, well, we've said his name a few times already. Young Arthur.
Arthur Fils. Wow.
Now a three-time champion on the ATP Tour. Two ATP 500s. This season alone. So he won Munich, obviously, early back in the season on clay.
Yeah.
And now Tokyo. And I love this as well. Again, we didn't tweet this, but it was something I was thinking about whilst watching basically this run. So 2022, we had Fritz Tiafoe in the final. Obviously, Fritz beat Tiafoe in that final. And then last year, it was Shelton Karatsev, I want to say, in the final. Obviously, Shelton won that. And now this year, it's Fils Ugonbert. And obviously, Fils came back in epic fashion to win that.
We in Japan, baby.
So Tokyo is like, there's something about Tokyo. Like, we get it right in Tokyo. But now, what a run, Lucy. Wow. Like, incredible.
Incredible.
I mean, where to start with it, really?
I don't even know where to really start, to be very honest.
Beating Fritz first round, top seed.
Yeah. So during the run, he had to play against Taylor Fritz.
Top seed. That is important to stress.
Yeah, he was, literally top seed. He had to play Ben Shelton, had to play Holger Rune, who are all top 20.
Yeah.
And then Matteo Berrettini as well, he did play, but he had to pull out due to injury after winning that first set
as well. It was a tie break.
Yeah, it was a tie break, but it was really close. Mm. I personally feel like even if he was 100% Matteo, I feel like Fils would have beaten
him. Yeah, he would have found a way.
Honestly, it was like that alone, the fact that he beat three top 20 players, like his draw was incredible.
Yeah, it was tough.
So for him to get to that final, it was like, you have to do this.
Yeah.
Like, come on, you have to. But having a final against someone where the head-to-head is crazy. And also, we have to remember is that Ugo was about to make, like, history. If he won that title, it would have been the first time we had, like, an ATP player, like, reaching seven finals and actually winning all of them. Yeah.
Unbeaten in every single final.
Played, it would be like 7. Oh, so it was like,
yeah, nuts.
Oh, shoot. So sometimes I even wonder, was that in his head a lot or whatnot? But before we get to the final, actually, I do want to talk about the Ben Shelton match.
Okay.
I was really excited about that. Obviously, having both of them playing, but that match,
a lot of drama.
Chaotic, but fun. Mm. It was like, literally, I was like, guys, what are we watching here? Like, this is actually crazy. But it was such a fun match. The first set, like, was really on job, like, super high level. You know, we all know that Shelton has great serves, stronger and stronger. I feel like the older he gets, the stronger and faster it goes. And when it comes to returns, that's something that Fils needs to work on. But on that match, he was ready. I think he knew I need to be on game when it comes to my returns, which he actually did. And Shelton, that first set, I don't know if it was a thing where he was like, I don't know if it was like nerves or what. I don't know what it was, but he was hitting a little bit more errors. But especially towards the net as well. And in the second set, it was so intense. Like, the first three games were so long. Like, it was literally, like, it was really long. And the thing is, that tired them out. Shelton got a medical timeout on his left leg.
It was a proper scrap.
Like, it was just, like, it was just crazy. And then, like, Fils were, like, cramping as well when he was just trying to save, like, a match point. Like, it was that second, it was just like literally the second set was so intense that it literally took their body out. And already these are two guys who this entire season they've been playing very intense matches.
Yeah.
Because the thing is that, which I'll talk about a lot during the final, Feast has this physical ability that is out of this world. And Shelton as well, like, he's the same. And I feel like this year he really proved that. Like, he's like, yeah, my physical is like up there. So they were literally killing themselves on that court. Like, it was like pow, pow, pow. Like, it was crazy. Like, it was so, like, intense. And then it went into a tie break, and then Shelton was up, like, 3-0, and it just gave him the confidence. And literally, because of the cramp that Feast had from that before the tiebreak in that second set, Shelton was able to like breeze that through. And then the third set came, and again, it was the same thing. It was really intense. And then literally, you couldn't, like, when the third set started, I was like, I can't tell you who's winning this match. Even the commentators were saying, like, I don't know who's winning this match. But I think with what I was most impressed about that match, it was like that, because that was a match. It's funny, because I tweeted during that match, like, Feast talks a lot about his mental, especially this year at his press conferences. And that was one of the reasons why Shelton was able, because really and truly, Shelton, I mean, Feast could have won that in straight sets, but Shelton was easy to get into his head. And once Feast is like, it's into his head, it just goes. But in this tournament, he proved to us, actually, I can do it, especially in the final. The Shelton match, here and there, like, it was once he got into his head and then he got back out, and he did that again during the final. But literally the second set, that's how really like Shelton was, and of course playing like the best, but it didn't take away anything. That match was incredible. I have to big up Shelton for giving us a lot of great matches this year. I'm not gonna lie. Shelton has actually given us a lot of good matches. A lot of my favorite matches this year, or entertaining matches, are from him. And it was really nice to see the difference between last year and this year. Like, he's leveled up crazy. I don't think he gets enough credit for that. But yeah, that was a fantastic match. Like, literally, at the end of it, I was like, yeah, you know what, guys? Thank you for that match. Like, Shelton, Feast, thank you for that entertaining match.
What about the semi-final with Runa, though? Because I thought that was, well, arguably more impressive than the Shelton result, because it was straight sets.
It was straight.
And also two tie breaks. Obviously, Runa was... Yeah, Runa was... Yeah, he was seeded.
Uh-huh.
Feast wasn't seeded in Tokyo.
Yeah.
So on paper, Runa should have won that match. But again, really? that definitely, Lucy. He was seeded.
But Runa has not really been on...
But I'm saying, when you're playing a seeded player as an unseeded player, you're the underdog.
True. You're the underdog, but that's true.
I was most impressed with the way Feast kind of handled that match. Not just, obviously... playing Runa, who's a quality player, but again, there was a lot of like mental angst, especially on Runa's part, because he does play with a lot of, there's a high stress level with Runa. And I think at the end of the first set, at the end of the first set was a tiebreak, obviously. Feast won the tiebreak. Runa, like, he lost it. He started smashing his racket. Obviously, Feast is looking at his team, like giving them the fist pump. And I was like, wow, he's really in this guy's head. It kind of carried on into the second set. It went to a tiebreak. But again, Feast closed that out in the second tiebreak again. Yeah. But I was impressed with how mentally tough he stayed in that match.
And this is what I'm saying. I feel like this tournament, he proved that, you know what, this is something that I've actually tackled on, because he mentioned it so many times at his press conference, like, my mental just, like, the second I get annoyed or I'm thinking too much, it messes up my game. But I think this year he's improved it. But that tournament, he showed to the world, like, yeah, I've actually worked on this and I can actually do it.
I'm going to say that for me, he showed that in Munich against Sasha Zverev in that final.
You're right.
Because that was also a free setter.
You're right.
And again, Zverev, he lost it, like, mentally.
Yeah.
So... And not to like discredit what you said, Lucy, but I was kind of thinking, hang on a minute, like, he's kind of shown, he's over the course of this season anyway, of course he's improved and there's been steady improvement in his overall game, but mentally, look at the Wimbledon run, for instance, he reached the fourth round at Wimbledon. That's his best to date. That's his best result at a Grand Slam. And that was this season.
Yeah.
And then obviously Munich, obviously that was a clay court event. Like, he's shown me enough to say, mentally, I'm okay. Like,
do you know what? I think the reason why I say that is because I've been to a lot more of his press conferences.
Okay, than most other players. And
that's the one thing he always, like, I don't think I've ever been to any of his, this year especially, where he has not mentioned
okay,
his mental ability. Mm. Like, he's well aware that he's great at it, but he's always like, that is the, like, that's the thing that can cost him the match,
okay,
a match the most. So that's why when I'm watching like these matches, I'm like, but hold on a minute, like, you are like, you're kidding. Because literally, I feel like this tournament, I'm not gonna lie, he had a lot more power, a lot more physicality, but his mental as well. Like, they were both high.
Mm.
They were both at ultimate high, especially at that final against Ugo. Like, that was insane. Because I'm so sorry. As much as I'm happy that Feast won that, Ugo had no business losing that match. I'm so sorry. That title, the thing is that, and I tweeted this on my personal, I believe, I feel like the new generation of ATP players, especially more ATP than WTA, I feel like they rely I'm not saying that back in the days they're not doing it, but this one, they rely way too much on their opponent's level. I think Ugo went into this tournament, they went into that match thinking, all I have to do is just get into this guy's head. And then, you know, when he saw, because the thing is, Artifiz was tired. He was done. Like, his body was, like, you know, tired and stuff. So I think as soon as he saw that he was not really into it, or like not the same level as before, I think Ugo got really comfortable. Yeah, yeah. Waited till the tie break of the second set for him to find a solution. Before that, it was just vibes. Ugo was literally like match point. He was like 40-0 up. Then had a match point, literally Feast saved all of that, took it to a tie break, cramping all over the place, and then still won the match. It was incredible for Feast, but I looked at it like, raw. Yeah. To a point where I even felt bad for Ugo. I was like, I hope he switched off his comments, because I know how the crazy bettors be.
Yeah.
But either way, it was a great match. And most importantly, it was so nice seeing how Feast was like, including Ugo into the win.
Oh, Frenchmen. I did love that, yeah.
And stuff.
One thing I love too, maybe, guys, you probably would have seen this too if you were paying attention. So when the match finished, obviously they were both kind of, well, I say they, Feast went over to his camp hugging his dad, which I loved.
Yeah.
Like, his dad picking him up, hugging him. And then they both went over to like each other's camps to like embrace. I love stuff. And nice. That was very like classy.
Yeah.
So French.
Yeah, it was nice. It's nice seeing Feast's dad like hugging Ugo
exactly,
and everything.
Exactly.
Like, yeah,
because obviously they're countrymen.
It's nice to see.
I think Humbert did say like, yeah, of course I'm disappointed to lose, but like I'm happy to, yeah, I'm happy that Feast, you know, was the victor.
Because yeah,
he's a friend and it's good to see. He's a good guy. Like,
and
I
the
love
and the all the French, like, they're all together, they're all playing for the same country.
I love
so
that, honestly.
It's nice seeing it. But in all honesty, this is such, and I think this win meant a lot to Feast, because he even put the picture of him with the title on his profile picture on Instagram. Like, he changed it to that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can literally, like, I think he even knows, like, you're beating all these top players, you're playing your best physically and also mentally. I feel like this is, it was an incredible level. This was about my favourite tournament of his.
I've always liked him as a player, and I feel like his ceiling's so high. Like, he's
back in the top 20 now.
And he's easily going to be a top 10 player. I don't know when, but like, he is a certified top 10 player.
And guess what? He's only 20.
That's
what
Lucy turned
20.
This is what I'm going to say.
Just in June.
There's so much more in terms of that he can improve on. Like you said, he's already physically, like, he's a specimen.
Oh,
like,
yeah. That forehand.
Great build. But for me, the serve, he can winning so much, so many more, like 3 points on that first serve.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if he gets that locked in, oh my God, it's a problem.
It's over for you guys.
It's actually a problem.
It's actually
and
a
I
problem.
Feel like that's something he needs to work on, because he should be winning way more 3 points off that first serve.
No, for sure.
Because it could be a weapon.
Yeah.
So, and if he's getting, imagine if he's hitting, like, I don't know, 15, 20 aces a game, that's going to save a lot of energy.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. Because he's, especially the match against Ugo, like the first set especially, like he's like, his service game, they were going fast because he was serving like big. He was serving big. Forehand was incredible. And the thing is, you know what I like about Feast is like, when he's about to hit a forehand, you think it's going to be something calm.
He's winding
bow,
up.
Like whacking it. I'm like, raw. I was not ready for that. It's beautiful. He knows how to cover the court in all different ways. Like, he did it a lot with Shelton as well. Like, Shelton really made him move. So for him to do all of that, and he was in the court 3 hours longer than Ugo, and it was just...
And that's why, to bring it back to the Runa match too, I was impressed, because like you said, the Shelton match took so much out of him physically.
Yeah.
but he was able to come back and beat Runa in straight sets.
It was, yeah, you're right.
Like,
you're
come
right.
on. That's
did you know
huge.
What? It's because I knew he was gonna make it to the final. That Shelton match was that thing. It was like, it's just.
But then in the final, I swear you weren't sure if he was gonna win the final against Humbert. Because I think you said something about, what did you say?
I'm not going to lie. I swear to you, I don't remember. What did I say? Because of the head-to-head?
No, it wasn't the head-to-head. I think you said something about how they were, like, kind of buddy-buddy beforehand.
Oh!
But, like, for me, that's just the French way. Like, yeah, that is just the way they are. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No. I feel like when you have some sort of, like, I don't want to say hate because it's too strong, but if you have some sort of, like, yo, this competitor, like, is, you know, is different, but you're right. Maybe they're more mature than able to block it out.
They have that, man. They're athletes at the end of the day. So
you're right.
Of course
they're
going to have that, like, competitive.
Of course. No, I know. But I just feel like it's more intense and more entertaining when they're not really buddies. But look at Shelton and Feast, who are even playing doubles at Shanghai together right now.
They did lose first round, unfortunately. But
oh, okay. But it went to three sets, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it went to three sets.
10-point tiebreak.
Yeah, which is fun. So a massive, massive, massive well done to our champion, Arthur Fils. Looking forward. He did lose in Shanghai himself as well, but...
He did.
It was very close, though, because... Roberto, listen, you need to rest. Yeah, you need to rest. It was very close, but he needs to rest anyways. But shout out to Arthur Fils. Shout out to Hugo. And Shelton, thank you for that match. 100% one of my favourite matches this year. And then who do we have next?
Should we go Coco?
Yes.
Let's go to Beijing. So as we record this, she hasn't played the final yet.
Yeah.
But she is through to the final in Beijing.
So congrats, Coco! Oh, we'll see you next year. What a day.
But yeah, what a run she's had. So
for sure.
I don't want to say she's struggled, but there have been some matches where she's had to fight. And I'm thinking of the one against the Ukrainian qualifier.
Yo.
Who I've never heard of, by the way.
Everyone was saying that. Everyone was like, who is this girl? Who is she?
Respectfully.
Respectfully in a good way.
She's got game.
I was like, wait, hold on, chill on my girl. Mm. Like, relax. Like, she was really on job.
I feel like we should say her name.
It's Yulina. Yulia.
Come on, Lucy, take your time. Take your time with it. Sorry.
Yulia Starodubstra.
I'm going to say Yulia Starodubstava.
I think you got it right. Either way, Yulia, apologies. We are really trying here.
But she came through qualifying.
She came through qualifying. But she was incredible. Incredible, incredible, incredible.
And that was a quarterfinal. But the round of 16 match, obviously, was Coco Gauff versus Naomi Osaka.
Yes.
And that
was,
unfortunately, that ended in
Osaka retiring. She said that she was practicing right before, felt some back pain. But then she still wanted to force herself to go.
Yeah, and I mean, she took the opening set.
She was the opening set, exactly. Yeah. But she was like, yeah, let me just see how it goes and stuff. But regarding that, did you watch that match? Coco and Saka?
Yeah. Because that came out, or that was playing.
While we had the Wimbledon
exactly,
thing going
stuff
on.
Going on
so that's
fair.
The thing, so... Yeah. Because of that, I'm not going to lie, it was hard for me to focus. I really wasn't focusing. I was like, listen, I've got Wimbledon doing a collab post with me right now. Osaka and Coco, I'm going to check y'all later. But do you know what's crazy? I really did not think, like, you see how everyone was like, oh my gosh, finally, Coco. I was like, guys, I don't think it's going to be...
Really?
Because we're talking about the two great players, but they're not 100% right now. Coco came into this tournament, not 100%.
Yeah, but it's still like, it's an exciting matchup. Lucy, come on, man.
Okay, this is more my personal preference.
Okay.
I like exciting matchups when they are both on a good level. If I'm getting an exciting matchup, and this could be anyone, this is not even just Coco and Fing. If I'm getting, for example, if Shelton and Feast were not on job, that match would have been so... Do you get what I mean?
I hear you. I do hear
you. I prefer when the thing is like, okay, both of you are giving you your all and you're on form. You're great, you know. Osaka is still trying to figure things out. Fine. Coco has been a little bit rocky. Fine. So I did not really have, you know, that much.
Or high expectations.
High expectations. But it's funny because I felt that way regarding Coco and regarding Osaka and Iga. And now that's like literally one of my favorite matches of the year. Do you get what I mean?
French,
But that's because Osaka just came out of it. Maybe it could have been the same. But yeah, I didn't. Surprisingly, I knew I didn't have that same excitement as everyone else.
Fair enough.
But it was still nice seeing both of them, don't get me wrong.
Because Osaka, she played pretty well. So she started in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
She beat Lucia Bonzetti in straight sets.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the second round, it was Yulia Putintseva. And that was in three sets. Putintseva was the 21st seed. Third round, it was Katie Volonets. And that was straight sets. Volonets mm-hmm. is a good player too.
Mm-hmm,
and for Osaka to win that in straights, after beating Putintseva in three,
that the round before. And by the way, that Putintseva match, she was really, like,
she came
it was
impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even that, it was really close. Like, that comeback was impressive. Like, a lot of us were really impressed. And even that first round as well, one thing I noticed, and that goes back to the Patrick thing, it was at that match that I realized, oh, okay, I see the changes. She was moving a lot more, going more towards it. Like, she was moving her legs. She was moving the legs. The movements were there.
That's the second match into the partnership. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. So, picking up on that already. But that Putintseva match was really impressive. But I'll give her credit for that.
Obviously, she got a first round bye, mm-hmm. being the fourth seed. So she played Clara Burrell, mm-hmm. second round, straight sets win, 5-3. Third round, it was Katie Bolter, 26th seed. Again, straight sets, 5-2. So like, she came in pretty good
form. Yeah.
And then obviously, Osaka took the opening set, but was unable to finish the match. I thought Coco did well in that match because for me, it would have been easy for her to kind of like fall away after losing the first set. And like, I don't know, maybe letting the kind of occasion
mm-hmm.
kind of get to her, but she ain't that type of player, man. Like she's in it for the long haul. Like she's not going to like just basically crumble under any type of like match pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's there to fight. And she's shown us that now for a few years, really and truly. And I feel like, I felt it for Osaka, the fact that she had to retire. But then I also understood her reasoning behind it. Obviously, she kind of came out and clarified, it was the back issue she had coming in.
And then Coco even helped her with her back.
Yeah, which is a lovely scene.
Nice.
Like, I did like that. And even Coco said as well during the match, like, it's a shame that like she can kind of see that she wasn't moving like great.
Yeah. So, and I kept seeing people, sorry to cut you off. I kept seeing comments from people saying like, rah, the fact that Osaka was moving like that and she had a back pain was great.
I'm pretty sure she
was, because obviously I wasn't really focusing because I was busy, but yeah, these are the things that I kept on saying. So I was like, okay, that was looking positive.
But I think it's good signs. And we did say, like, obviously tough to see Osaka retire, but really good signs she's shown like during this tournament, because she got some good wins. And that was a decent performance against Goff. It's just a shame, obviously, it had to end in a retirement. But for Goff, I feel like, that quarterfinal, that was tricky because she lost that opening set, but then came back and won it in 3-2 in the end pretty comfortably.
And bro, it's not even just that. That first set, she had zero winners.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough.
Seven double faults. To be fair, when she came into the court, I was like, I said, yo, I think something happened. I was like, because even her mood was not the same. Yeah. Like, she was even, it was like, she didn't even, even want to, like, be there.
Yeah.
The second set, I think her first serves were, like, 20-something percent. Literally, second set, everything changed.
Switched up.
Everything changed. Zero double faults, mad winners, first serve up. And I was like, wow.
And I wouldn't even say, like, she was playing to, like,
she was. That's the thing. She wasn't. Yeah. She literally wasn't. And then she ended up winning them. Like, I generally thought, I was really sexy, like, yo, we need to start podding soon. Because I thought it was done. Because of the way that, I don't think you understand, like, the level of that first match, like, the first set was not
it. It was a tough watch.
It was a very tough watch. It was very tough. But the way she turned things around, incredible. And then it's been like that for the rest of the other rounds.
Well, the semi-final, which was against Paula Badosa, the 16th seed, or 15th seed, sorry. Again, she lost the first set 6-4.
Yeah.
I think she was 4-2 down in the second set.
Mm-hmm.
But then she found a way, won it 6-4, and then took the third 6-2.
Let me tell something. Before you guys start yapping.
Talk, Lucy.
Before you guys start yapping, Listen, if you guys can't beat Kirkko and she's not even playing her best yet.
Stop it.
If you guys can't beat, you can't chat too much because I'm seeing you not chatting. You're just chatting, but you're not beating.
But who she got in the final? Karolina Mukova. That's going to be a match. That is going to be a great match. God. And obviously we can't talk too much about it because obviously by the time this comes out, it will have been played. But Mukova's run, like she beat Sabalenka in the quarters, Qin Wenzheng in the semis, obviously Qin Wenzheng being the home favourite.
Yeah.
And that was a straight sets win against Zheng, 3-4. Mm-hmm. Beat Sabalenka in three sets. Mm-hmm. So like she's in form, and we all know she's a talented player. She's been out injured for a while.
Yeah.
But coming back, I can't believe she's not seeded. Like that will change like next year. She's going to be seeded at all these events.
It's not like she was injured.
Exactly. But how do you see that match going? I know that's probably redundant, but
yeah. So I'm not gonna say too much since we're not sure, but all I'm gonna say is I won't be surprised if Kirkko wins.
I like that.
I'm sorry, because the way that she's like, she's found a way this year, and I'm like
in Beijing,
man.
The youngest finalist since 2010.
Yeah, since Sharapova.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Time is here, but honestly, big up Kirkko.
And obviously, Beijing is a WTA 1000. It's a big deal.
Big up Kirkko. She's a fighter. I know, like, I want the serves to improve. Oh, one thing I do want to give her props for, her forehand. This forehand that you guys bullied her for, stop talking about it now, because she was hitting some incredible winners with those forehands. Like, her forehands this tournament was amazing. Yeah. Like, I was very impressed. So let's hope that if she can improve the forehand that you guys have been crying about for so long, that means she can do with a serve eventually. But either way, one thing you can't take away from her is that she's an incredible fighter. She knows how to find a solution. That's the thing. Kirkko is very smart when it comes to tennis. Because every time she loses a match...
That's a great high tennis IQ.
She has high tennis IQ. And I feel like she has high tennis IQ. You guys like to lazily just label black players
as technique
and athletes and blah, blah, blah. Great athletes. She is way more than that. She's a fantastic athlete, but her tennis IQ is right there. She knows what to do to win the match. She just needs the time at times to like execute and sometimes it blocks her out of the way, but she knows what she's doing.
I'm going to say this as well. Like, I think tennis players in general, for the most part, they are very clever people, like in general.
Because they don't know anything else but tennis.
You know what blows my mind as well? Like when you talk to a player or like you listen to an interview, and they can be so specific about how a point was played or like their memory. It's just like, it blows my mind.
I remember watching Bublik on the UTS thing and he was describing some, like he remembered Nick Kyrgios matches more than Nick Kyrgios. Like, it was insane. Like it was crazy. You're honestly right. You're right. But yeah, I wish Kirkko got more credit for her
being able
to literally pull things off. And she's shown at this tournament. I'm with you guys. It's hard to watch and seeing her serve like that. We all see it. She knows it. She's well aware. Mm. But let's focus on the things that she's actually great and let's take advantage of it. Like, matches, she should not be winning them. But no one has beaten her. That's my thing. They're not beating her. I've said it so many times. You guys can talk till tomorrow. They're still not beating her.
That is why she deserves all the credit, because she finds a way.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah,
she perseveres. She doesn't let it like affect the rest of her game. Like, she'll get over it and then it's... Do you get me onto the next point? So... Yeah, keep going, Kirkko.
Keep going, Kirkko. And we'll be here rooting for you.
Before we finish on the Aegis wing, I want to mention Hayley Baptiste. So she did get a good win against Sloane Stephens in Korea, which was a WTA 250. And that was the first round. That was like probably 2 weeks ago now.
Yeah.
But she did lose to Daria Kasatkina in the second round. She also came through qualifying in Beijing, did Baptiste. Mm-hmm. She reached the second round, but then she did lose to Anna Kalinskaya, Yannick Sinner's girlfriend. Who was a temp seed, and that was a three set match. So good to see Baptiste like playing at this level. And obviously she did crack the top 100. I think she's just outside now, but she's kind of on the cusp of being inside the top 100. So always good to see. So we always do root for Hayley Baptiste. Mm-hmm. I want to say that's it for Asia.
Yeah, for now. For now, of course. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things, but you know, remember, guys, to keep following us on Twitter and
And obviously, IG. the men now in Shanghai.
They're in Shanghai right now. Yeah. So yeah, remember daily tweets all day. But yeah, those were definitely the highlights. But we can't ignore a big news. I know this is Blackspin Global, but this is a big tennis news.
Before we get to that, actually.
Oh, okay.
I want to mention Felix Auger-Aliassime.
Oh yeah,
so he's been getting so much like, we won't. Davis Cup. Always brings it, Davis Cup for Canada.
So, and do you know what? People actually make fun of it. They're like, one thing about Felix, he's going to play for Canada.
Oh, it's a fact. Brings it indoors. So I want to mention the fact that, yeah, Canada are now through to the final eight in Madigo, I think it is, at the end of the year. But yeah, Felix was instrumental in Canada qualifying. So he got wins against Sebastian Baez of Argentina, Jack Draper, obviously, who he lost to in Cincinnati, controversially, do you remember?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then there was a Finnish player he also beat. I've not got his name here, apologies. But three good wins there for Felix. And obviously, he's had a tough time in Asia since. Yeah. But we need to mention that because, yeah, we've not been on since the Davis Cup was played. Obviously, that was played, I think, around the same time as, like, Laver Cup or week after before Laver Cup. Yeah. So, yeah, shouts out to Felix.
How come? Something just hit me. How come we never been Davis Cup and is in the UK?
I know.
Years ago.
I was kind of thinking this year we should have been there because it was in Manchester.
Maybe next year.
Although, to be fair, it's going back to home and away. So there probably will be.
We'll see how it goes. If there's any in the UK, because I know, shout out Tennis Weekly, I know they go Davis Cup. I don't know if they went to the Manchester one, but I think they're going to the final though.
Okay.
I think they're going to the finals here. So check them out, guys, if you want to know some more Davis Cup.
Nice little plug. I like that. Friendly.
Stuff, right? Yeah, come on.
And also, before we close, we'll talk about Mr. Sinner. on the Challenger circuit.
Yes.
Eliakim
Koulibaly
from Ivory Coast. So he got a big win.
Yeah.
Top 100 win against Quentin Ellis.
Ellis, yeah.
And that was in Orleans in France. Mm-hmm, that was a Challenger event. So yeah, he entered that event ranked 420. But yeah, after basically, I think he lost in the second round. Was it the second round? Mm. I think he lost in the second round. But yeah, ended. He's currently now 398, so he's in the top 400.
Nice.
And again, Koulibaly, he's someone we've been speaking about since he was a junior.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see him like
for sure
finding his way
and being such a big player. Like
and it's
that.
A long listen. It's a long haul. Like this is a marathon. Mm-hmm. Like this is not something that's going to happen overnight.
Yeah.
But it's just nice to see him get that win. That's a top 100 win. So hopefully, that's going to give him some confidence going forward. Mm. But yeah, I thought we need to basically highlight that and mention.
No, for sure.
Yeah, mention some players we don't usually speak about that often. So,
yeah, no, shout out to them for sure.
But yeah, Yannick Sinner, Lucy, say what you want to say. I'm joking, go on.
Say what you want to say. Raw, now he makes it seem like I was trying to cook him. It's a big, because this is really big in tennis. I feel like, can't ignore this. So obviously, Yannick Sinner, everyone thought, yeah, he's calm, cool. And then boom, anti-doping agency was like, come right here, boy. We're seeking to ban you. So they are seeking to ban him for a period of inability of between 1 and 2 years. So he'll be banned. He could be banned for like literally playing tennis during those 2 years.
Okay, go on.
Yeah, they said the views that a finding of no fault or negligence was not correct under the applicable rules in their statement. Appeal will be happening soon, but it's not, not very soon, actually. It could be like a couple of months. It could be either just before Australian Open or after. Listen, with this in the case, you know what? It's tough because it's like, I think it's tough to judge it because of the way that it happened. Mm. But again, I said this before. I'm not doing like everyone else is doing. Oh, Yannick Sinner doesn't seem like the guy to be cheat. What does that mean? Mm. What does a cheater mean? What does a cheater look like? Like, what does that mean? So I'm not doing that. Because you just never know. If, however, he's truly not like guilty and stuff. Like, the only thing, I feel like the people who are to blame are not the people to, it's not Sinner. It's not his team. Because really and truly, and shout out to Eubanks, he really explained it to us after the interview, like, because we spoke about it off camera and he explained it to us. And long story short, Cinna actually did what they told him, this is what you have to do. He followed what they told him to do.
By the book.
Mm-hmm. By the book. So if Cinna truly did not cheat and he then did follow the book, then I can understand where he's coming from, where he's like, this is actually really messed up. At the end of the day, you know, the ITI, they are the one where they did can whatever they did or whatnot. I think he might actually get the ban. Initially, I didn't. Till I then realised about Pogba. So, there's a popular soccer player. I don't know if in America you guys know him, Pogba.
Of course Americans will know Paul Pogba.
Do you? Okay, I don't know. Okay, guys, I'm sorry. I don't watch football, so I don't know how big some certain players are. But I know Pogba is massive.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I had no idea this guy was banned. I thought he was chilling, living life, or he was just on holiday or something. But I then saw the news yesterday that, oh yeah, they reduced his ban. And I was like, what do you mean reduce his ban? So he, in my head, I'm thinking, if a massive, great, popular player, and bear in mind, soccer is way bigger than tennis. If he can be banned, even though his situation was different to Cinna, my thing is like, if a player like him can be banned, who is Yannick Cinna to not get banned? Because, do you get what I mean? Like, yeah, he's number one player, but I feel like, for example, I feel like more people know about Alcaraz than Cinna. I'm talking about the locals. I'm talking about people that don't follow tennis like that. So I actually think it could happen. What do you think?
I feel like, yeah, I don't think it's going to be a two-year ban. I think it will be three months. Think a few months. Yeah, and I feel like it would be a thing
Or they might do like Pogba, because Pogba initially was 4 years, right?
Exactly,
and
then it's like 18 months suspended. Exactly. Yeah,
and then they reduced it like dramatically.
So he'll be back playing, I think, in March, but he'll be allowed to train from January, as in Pogba.
Okay.
But I think, with Cinna, I think it's going to be months. Not years.
Weeks.
And like, I
just
feel
to shut people
I feel
up.
Like what you said initially about how Cinna's really not to blame here.
Yeah.
It's really the authorities above that kind of look after everything, because that's kind of what's been, I guess, been questioned with the whole, I don't know, cases away from Cinna.
Yeah.
With players that have like either not tested positive for anything, but they've just missed tests.
Mm-hmm.
Or players that have tested positive for something, but again, have, you know, given evidence that they feel was sufficient that show that they weren't, or they didn't deliberately take anything, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think with Cinna, in Cinna's case, because obviously he is who he is, world number one, you know, he's got millions at his disposal.
Yeah.
And he was able to, like Chris told us, like he was able to basically put his team together like and quickly. I think it was a two-week span in terms of time span where he had to get everything in terms of like all of his evidence in order and present it. And that's what he did.
Mm-hmm.
Hence why he was able to basically play, you know, whilst this is all kind of happening in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question, Lucy, yeah, I agree. I feel like he's going to get banned, but it won't be for 2 years. It will be for months.
Yeah, I think
this is no slight. And like you said, who are we to kind of judge or say, oh yeah, he is a cheater or... If the evidence is presented to say this was in his system, it was in his system. So
let's see how it goes. Either way, this is a very embarrassing.
It's not a good look for the sport. 100%.
We're already struggling to get people in, and you guys, and all this is happening. I think that's why like the ATP sites of the media, they're really trying to, you know, show him like the good side and stuff. And I think he's also playing his best tennis to prove like, hey, I'm not a cheater. Like, I'm out here.
And listen, credit to him as well.
I'm not gonna lie,
he's been doing his thing.
Boy, he needs to pay them legal fees. He needs to win them cash.
Then he reached the final in Beijing.
He lost to Alcaraz, who's, you know, Alcaraz. It's not like he lost to just anyone. And so let's see how that goes.
It's going to be interesting for sure.
But yeah, I think that's it for now.
I think we've covered a lot there, Lucy.
This was a fun episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And by the way, guys, remember again, please get your merch.
Please.
Get your merch. Support them for UK Black History Month.
Exactly.
For UK Black History Month.
I like that.
You know, I'm even going to put a description for UK Black History Month. Please purchase a merch.
I do like that.
Guys, thank you so much. Remember to stay tuned on our socials to get daily updates on the tennis and news and me tweeting random stuff and funny memes, because you know how I am. I love my jokes. And we'll catch you guys soon. and hope you enjoy this episode.
Until next time, guys. Take care.